Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. U.S. Army Private Bradley Manning, the young man who arguably really put WikiLeaks on the map with a vast trove of classified U.S. documents and videos, has been paying a heavy price for that. In isolation in a Marine brig since last July, still no trial. Deprived of clothing, sleep, reading glasses, and more, the Army defends it, the President defends it, but to a lot of people it's starting to look pretty cruel and unusual, like they're trying to break Private Manning. This hour on Point, WikiLeaks, Bradley Manning, and American Justice. You can join the conversation. How do you see Bradley Manning? Whistleblower? Traitor? Hero? Not? Should any American citizen be treated this way? Should this one? You can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. Last week, in an interview with PBS's Frontline, Bradley Manning's father, Brian, spoke for the first time about his son's incarceration, comparing it to circumstances at Guantanamo, saying that the conditions and treatment of his son are reprehensible.
They worry about people down, you know, in a base in Cuba, but here they are, have someone in, you know, on our own soil, and you know, under their own control, and they're treating him this way. I mean, it's, you know, you just can't believe it. I mean, it's shocking enough that I would come out of, you know, our silence as a family and say, now then, this, you know, you've crossed the line. This is wrong.
Yesterday, the ACLU complaining. Ohio Congressman Dennis Kucinich has been complaining, wrote to Defense Secretary Robert Gates earlier this month, demanding to be allowed to visit Bradley Manning in the brig at Quantico and asking, is this Quantico or Abu Ghraib? Here he is on MSNBC after he wrote that letter.
Well, it appears they're trying to break him. I mean, this is not defensible. There is no way, stretch of the imagination, that this could be allowed or that this should be happening in America. I'd like to see any other prisoner anywhere in this country who's being subjected to that where there wouldn't be cries of outrage by the public. Everyone's presumed innocent until proven guilty.
But President Obama, at his recent press conference, was talking about it. ABC's Jake Tapper quoted State Department spokesman P.J. Crowley, who called the conditions of Manning's imprisonment ridiculous, counterproductive, and stupid, and who then had to resign over those comments. The president has taken a lot of heat on the editorial pages for this response.
With respect to Private Manning, I have actually asked the Pentagon whether or not the procedures that have been taken in terms of his confinement are appropriate and are meeting our basic standards. They assure me that they are. I can't go into details about some of their concerns, but some of this has to do with Private Manning's safety as well.
We will hear in this hour from Glenn Greenwald with Salon.com, a big critic of what's going on with Bradley Manning, and from John Shelburne, a reserve Marine judge, advocate, general, just up from Quantico. But joining me first from Washington is Scott Shane. He covers national security for the New York Times, has been reporting for months now on WikiLeaks and Private Bradley Manning. Scott Shane, thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks very much for having me.
What can you tell us about Bradley Manning's circumstances right now?
Well, right now, as far as I actually checked with the Quantico Marine Base this morning, and it seems nothing has changed since I last talked to them on Friday, and Pentagon put out some statements on Friday. Bradley Manning is on what they call maximum custody, sort of maximum security. He's on prevention of injury watch, which by military standards is less than a suicide watch, but is an expression of concern that the prisoner might harm himself. And he is he's deprived of his clothes at night and is forced to wear what they call a tear-proof smock. And then he wears an ordinary jumpsuit during the day. He has very little contact with other people. Again, he's not, by military standards, officially in solitary confinement, but he's in a cell that does not have a view of any other cell. He can shout to other detainees in nearby cells, if there are any, and he can talk occasionally to guards, but apparently they don't discuss much with him. So he's quite isolated, certainly.
The ACLU, in their letter yesterday to Defense Secretary Robert Gates, says stripped naked, prolonged isolated confinement, utter idleness, subjected to sleep deprivation through repeated physical inspections through the night, deprived of any meaningful opportunity to exercise, even in his cell, stripped of his reading glasses so that he cannot read. How long has he been in Quantico, and on what charges, Scott?
He was arrested in May, last May, in Kuwait. He is accused of having passed hundreds of thousands of classified documents and confidential government documents to WikiLeaks when he was working as a low-level intelligence analyst in Iraq. After being arrested in May, he was eventually moved in July to this brig, as they call military jail, at Quantico. It's the jail for the Washington Military District, and he's being held there while they essentially do the preliminary work before they actually have a hearing that would determine whether he will face a court-martial. There are conflicting versions from the prosecutors and the defense as to who's responsible for the slow pace of things. He's undergoing what appears to be a very prolonged evaluation of his mental state. The prosecution has said the defense has been, you know, essentially not wanting things to speed along. So there have been sort of mutual accusations of who's responsible for how slow things are moving. But he's in a very preliminary state, you know, again, the mental evaluation. Then you have something called an Article 32 hearing, and then perhaps, presumably, a court-martial.
Among the most recent charges brought against him, aiding the enemy, which hypothetically could mean a death sentence, though at this point the military is saying they're not pursuing that sentence?
That's right. Initially, he had a set of charges which basically were the equivalent of disclosing classified information and related things. I think that by the Army's count, they totaled up to a possible maximum sentence of 52 years. Then they, as often happens in the civilian system as well as the military system, they had sort of superseding charges after more research had been done and so on. And they added something called aiding the enemy. The enemy in this case being apparently the Taliban, because he's accused of leaking Afghan war documents. And so the aiding the enemy charge does can technically carry a possible penalty of capital punishment, of execution. The military has said they will not seek that, but still he would face potentially life in prison.
Just to be reminded, it was about a year ago, allegedly, that Private Manning downloaded about 250,000 diplomatic cables between the end of March and early May last year. The thing that's really drawn the most attention here are the exact conditions of his its duration, but also the conditions and the stripping naked. Now, it's odd. On the other hand, it's not. I mean, this is the material, what it's all about. Is he naked? Was he naked? Under what conditions? In his boxer shorts? What? Is this typical? Can you be very precise about that, Scott?
I can try to be. Maybe I should preface it by saying there are two interpretations of what's happened. The military's version is, you know, they are prohibited by privacy rules for going into detail, but they essentially imply and at times state that everything that's been done is based on the rules that govern a prisoner in these categories, and that the more extreme qualities of his conditions of confinement are related to the fear that he might harm himself. President Obama, you know, referred to that obliquely last week when he weighed in for the first time on this subject. He talked about some of it's for Private Manning's safety. The critics of this confinement don't believe it, basically. They note that Manning's lawyer, Manning himself in court papers, Manning's friends all say they don't think he's a suicide risk, and they argue that essentially he's being punished without ever being convicted. that this is sort of vindictive behavior, perhaps to encourage him to cooperate with prosecutors in a possible prosecution of Julian Assange and so on. So those are the sort of diametrically opposed interpretations of his treatment. Factually, he again is in this category called maximum custody, which limits him, limits his movements. He's required to be in his cell 23 hours a day. He goes out for exercise, which essentially appears to involve walking in a in another room for an hour a day. He was always required to strip down to his boxer shorts at night. Then on March 2nd, by his lawyer's account and his own account in court papers, he made a sarcastic remark about how, hey, I could harm myself with the strap of my flip-flops or with my my shorts. And this led to much more strict conditions. He was stripped of all clothing for several days at night. And then they gave him this smock to wear.
Dennis Kucinich says they're trying to break him. What's the Army's response?
Well, the government says this has nothing, this is not any part of a prosecution strategy. This is simply, the treatment under the rules and the categories that he's in. And they certainly imply, again, without giving the details for privacy reasons, that this has to do with his mental health and the fear that he might harm himself.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the WikiLeaks drama and the treatment of imprisoned Army Private Bradley Manning, the accused leaker. Critics cry torture lately. Julian Assange has been talking about Bradley Manning. Of course, he's got troubles of his own, but they are related. Here he is with Dylan Radigan in December, talking about Bradley Manning and the conditions of Manning's imprisonment at Quantico. Here's WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange.
We've recently heard calls to try and set up a plea deal with Bradley Manning to testify against me personally, to say that we engaged in some kind of conspiracy to commit espionage. Now, absolute nonsense. Absolute nonsense. That's not how our technology works. Well, not how organizations work. I never heard of the name Bradley Manning before it appeared in the media. But his conditions have been getting worse and worse and worse in his cell as they attempt to pressure him into testifying against me.
Pressure him into testifying against me, says WikiLeaks' Julian Assange. The president says he's asked the military. They say everything is fine. No problem here, Mr. President. For one, Ohio Congressman Dennis Kucinich doesn't buy it. Here he's, again, questioning the treatment of Bradley Manning.
Forcing him to stand nude outside his cell, waking him up every 5 minutes, making him the subject to all kinds of indignities. I mean, this is, who are we as a country?
You can join us at 800-423-8255. We've been joined by Scott Shane of the New York Times, who's been covering WikiLeaks and Private Bradley Manning. We're joined right now as well from Washington by John Shelburne, director of the Criminal Defense Clinic, professor of law at Roger Williams School of Law in Rhode Island. He is a Reserve Marine Judge Advocate General, a lieutenant colonel, currently on active duty. He drove up today from Quantico, Virginia, where Private Bradley Manning is incarcerated, to join us. He was an active-duty JAG advising the Marines in Iraq at the time of the Abu Ghraib prosecutions of U.S. personnel. He wasn't directly involved in those cases, but observed. John Shelburne, thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks, Tom.
And with us from Rio de Janeiro in Brazil is Glenn Greenwald, lawyer, columnist, blogger, known mostly best for his columns in Salon.com. He's been writing a lot about the Bradley Manning case. Last fall won the Online Journalism Award for Best Commentary for his investigative article on the arrest of Bradley Manning as the alleged WikiLeaks leaker. Glenn Greenwald, thank you very much for being with us.
Great to be here.
First to you, Glenn, what do you see going on in this case?
What I see going on is a series of extremely repressive conditions of detention that bear no relationship whatsoever to any legitimate objective, including those that Brig officials have said they're trying to achieve. And these conditions are the kinds of conditions that a whole slew of psychiatric studies and even military studies have said in the past really end up breaking a person psychologically and inflicting long-term psychiatric injury. I mean, to hold somebody by themselves in a cell 23 hours a day without any human contact and allow them out of the cell only 1 hour a day to walk around by themselves in a room is really cruel and inhumane, as all sorts of organizations from Amnesty International to the ACLU to most major American editorial pages have now said. And I think that regardless of whether or not they've done this in the past or this is the first time they've done it, it's far below standards of Western norms of justice, and that's why it's triggering so much emphatic condemnation around the world.
John Shelburne, you're a lieutenant colonel with the Marine Reserves as well as a law professor. ACLU calls Bradley Manning's conditions of confinement unconstitutional and gratuitously harsh. You've been around. You just come up from Quantico. What do you say, John?
I say, having had clients in similar positions, you know, as a defense lawyer, we make those same arguments almost every time we get the opportunity. But having also been around, having prosecuted, having been around this system, those provisions that the brig is operating under, they're time tested, and the ultimate issue, you know, whether it's, you know, David Combs making the argument or whether it's the government prosecutor saying, hey, we've done everything by the rules. Ultimately, there's a system in place that allows for these arguments to be made in front of a military judge if they ever get to that point where they're in front of a court. And if they're deemed to be illegal or punitive or of some nature above and beyond what is expected in a brig situation, there are remedies for the accused.
But by that time that happens, he could be, if indeed this is what's happening, he could be broken. I mean, is this standard procedure? Why naked in his cell? Why so much isolation? Do you see that as merited in this case?
Well, I think it goes back to what, you know, the president's basic comment, and then what Scott identified earlier about the even if it was a sarcastic statement that the string in my underwear or whatever he was referring to as shoestraps.
Yep.
You know, when they make those comments, we are, you know, from a military standpoint, very, very concerned about committing, you know, people committing suicide. And as you've probably seen the numbers coming out of Iraq and Afghanistan, those numbers have been a constant concern. And it increases, obviously, when you put somebody in a confinement facility.
But does it really make sense to you in your gut? Does the way that this soldier is being treated, he's an American citizen, after all, he did something very big. A lot of people are really upset about it. But does it seem right to you, fundamentally right?
Well, from a personal standpoint, I always have a similar concern when you talk about putting somebody in confinement for 23-plus hours, you know, and just giving the hour to walk around. But, you know, on the other side of it, you look at the procedures, you look at the process, and there is a process in place to challenge that, and David Combs is doing just that. They filed the 138 complaint. I know it was denied. But there is an appeal procedure for that as well that goes all the way up to Secretary of the Navy, and these issues aren't going to be ignored.
Glenn Greenwald, the military told the president, everything's fine here, sir. But, of course, that's been said before in circumstances where it turned out things were not fine. If this is unduly harsh, if it is, what would be the motive for that, Glenn?
Well, I mean, I think that's the key point that you just touched upon, which is throughout the last decade, when everybody now recognizes that there was extreme and demented abuse taking place in America's detention facilities around the world, military and government officials were standing up in public, assuring everyone that everything was being done professionally and in accordance with guidelines and the like. This is what government officials and military officials say no matter what it is that they do. And what's interesting is not even the military is really contesting the factual basis here for how he's being treated. Nobody's denying that he's being held in a cell 23 hours a day or having his clothes taken from him and the like. And I think there are several motives. I mean, one motive is that the Justice Department has told reporters from the New York Times, such as Charlie Savage, that their objective is to prosecute WikiLeaks and Julian Assange. And the only way they can hope to do that in a way that doesn't criminalize journalism and investigative journalism is to try and prove that WikiLeaks didn't merely passively receive documents from Manning, but they actively cooperated and conspired in trying to help him steal this information. And so they need Manning to incriminate Assange and WikiLeaks, and the way to do that is to by subjecting him to extremely inhumane and even torturous conditions so that he'll end up saying what you want him to say. That's why we torture people at Guantanamo and elsewhere, and that's what's being done here. And I think the broader objective is that this administration has, according to multiple sources, like the New York Times even, been unprecedentedly aggressive in trying to destroy the practice of whistleblowing, one of the very few ways that we have left of learning what our government is doing in the national security context. And I think treating Manning this way is a way of signaling to would-be whistleblowers who learn of similar corruption and deceit and illegality in the future that you better think twice and three and five times before you go public with what you learn, because look at what we're doing to Bradley Manning. We can do anything to you that we want, and nobody has any recourse.
Scott Shane, I know we've just got you for another minute there with the New York Times. What about do you see a link between the Department of Justice approach to WikiLeaks and Julian Assange, and what's going on with Private Manning at Quantico?
I have been told by government officials that there is no relationship there, that in other words, his treatment is not being directed by Justice Department prosecutors who are investigating Assange. I have no way of testing that claim. I do think that there's an element here of paranoia on the part of the military there in terms of suicide. I'm told that in brigs, in this brig and others, there have been suicides in recent years. And you can imagine what would happen if, in fact, Bradley Manning managed to harm himself. I'm not saying that that's a realistic fear, but I noted that David House, his friend who's visited him on a number of occasions, just made a public statement saying that I have watched my friend degrade over time physically, mentally, and emotionally. So his friends and supporters essentially are saying that this treatment is so harsh and his isolation is so extreme that it's affecting his mental state. But at the same time, they're saying there's no chance that he could harm himself. And, you know, I can't really sort out that that contradiction. But I do think there is an element here of the military being extremely concerned that something could happen to him in the cell.
And do you agree with Glenn Greenwald that there's something he could say in that cell or in an interrogation that would implicate Julian Assange in such a way that the Department of Justice could go after him without going after everybody else, including your newspaper, the New York Times, which, of course, published a lot of these cables that came out of Private Manning, allegedly out of his data dump?
Well, there's never been in American history a successful prosecution of a non-government employee for disclosing American classified information. Assange is, of course, not even an American citizen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, many people in my business think it would be a disaster for the press if Assange and WikiLeaks were successfully prosecuted because, you know, we routinely, fairly often, get a hold of classified information from government sources and put it in the newspaper. And so in that sense, it's very hard to distinguish what we do from what WikiLeaks did in this instance.
In your reporting, have you seen evidence that Bradley Manning conspired with WikiLeaks to bring all this material plus the videos to light?
No, I really haven't reported deeply on that subject. But, I mean, when you talk about a source conspiring with a reporter, I don't know the facts of this case, but I can certainly say there are many times when I have, you know, sneaked around and met someone in a quiet place, given them my home email address or my home phone or a friend's phone so they can call me on a phone that's not connected to, you know, to the newspaper. So, I mean, I suppose I have conspired many times with sources to get information.
Duly noted, Mr. Shane. thank you very much for joining us today, Scott.
Thanks very much for having me.
Scott Shane with the New York Times. Glenn Greenwald, John Shelburne, please stand by. I've got lots of comments here online and listeners lining up to join us. Some online, here's one not too sympathetic, saying WikiLeaks' overall intent is to discredit the U.S. government and the U.S. military is one. Another, Anita, says his treatment seems un-American. Charge him, put him on trial, let the punishment fit the crime. Could essentially be life in prison, possibly. Here's another one from Josh, says the only real crime here is telling the truth. Let's go to our callers. Christine in Medway, Massachusetts. Christine, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi. My suggestion is that the military probably finds itself, frankly, in between a rock and a hard place. It's very easy to be emotionally and morally outraged at the idea of someone being kept naked in their cell. But if something were indeed to happen to Private Manning and he successfully did harm himself, one can only imagine the outrage that would ensue following that. I have had family members in psychiatric units in a suicidal or very depressive state, and it is very common both in this country and worldwide that they are deprived of everyday, normal, what would seem to us very benign items, because it is shocking what anyone who is potentially very depressed and or suicidal, and that can change in an instant. Someone can seem very okay and logical in one instant and then be overridden by some very strong emotion very rapidly.
Christine,
and
we've got it. Of course, Bradley Manning is not in a psych ward, but we take your point there, and I appreciate your call. Let me get a couple more right here. Dana in Orleans, Massachusetts. Dana, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
You know, his treatment to me just confirms the title of a book that was published in the 70s by a radical press. It was called Military Justice is to Justice as Military Music is to Music. I see Bradley Manning as a whistleblower who's done a really wonderful thing for democracy by holding our government accountable. WikiLeaks goes beyond just a breach of diplomatic niceties. It really showed how our government lied about going into Iraq and how Britain would protect the United States' interests in its investigation of, you know, its involvement in Iraq.
Do you think he'll ever come out of prison, Dana?
I have no idea. If democracy works, yes, he will. If democracy is healthy, yes.
Dana, I appreciate your call. And one more right here. Ruth in Charleston, South Carolina. Ruth, you're on the air.
Yes, hi, Tom.
Hi.
Part of my question is, isn't it true that once when someone joins the military, they understand that they may be under different restrictions and different legal standing as far as what we civilians would consider humane treatment, perhaps in prison, that they are subjected maybe to things that a civilian wouldn't be subjected to, that they sign away a lot of their rights?
That's an interesting question, Ruth. Let me pick it up, if I may, and thank you for your call with John Shelburne. John, what about it? Is there a different standard of justice or standards for incarceration in the military from the rest of the country? The ACLU suggests not in its letter to Secretary Gates, but you tell us.
And I would agree with that position, that there is not a different standard. We don't check all of our constitutional rights at the door when we raise our right hand and swear an oath to the Constitution. We're not swearing an oath to anybody else or a commander. It's to the Constitution, and so those constitutional rights still exist. And that's precisely why, you know, standard of care at the Navy brigs or the Marine brigs is always subject to scrutiny from inside and out, and that's where the courts come in.
So do you see the way he's being handled here? I mean, I know your experience is in the military, not outside of it, but you teach law.
Well, it's actually a combination of both.
Okay.
I do the criminal defense clinic is a civilian-run clinic completely.
Is this beyond, then, what would happen in a civilian prison in this country, what could or would or should?
Not necessarily. And that's, I think, when you look at the concerns for his safety, the civilian prisons do the same, very similar procedures when you have someone who is on a suicide watch or a prevention of injury watch.
His attorney says, and he says, I'm not the least bit suicidal. I'm not a danger to myself. His attorney says they're trying to break him. They're pushing him into a psychological state.
At the same time, both the government and the defense are waiting on what we call a 706 evaluation, which is a mental health evaluation. And that certainly is something that I think the brig is looking to wait for.
Isn't that taking quite a while in itself here, as he's in?
It is, and I think the biggest issue there goes back to the level of classification. Everyone who listens to PFC Manning has to have the same clearance.
I'm I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking about the WikiLeaks drama and the treatment of imprisoned Army Private Bradley Manning, the accused leaker. His critics are saying this is a little bit of Abu Ghraib brought home to America in his treatment. Others are saying, look, this guy exposed an awful lot of secret information that was important to the United States, and he's just going to have to deal with it. We've been joined by Salon.com's Glenn Greenwald, author of How Would a Patriot Act and Great American Hypocrites. He joins us from Rio today. John Shelburne is with us as well. He is a Reserve Marine Judge Advocate General, JAG, also director of the Criminal Defense Clinic and professor of law at Roger Williams School of Law in Rhode Island. He's just come up today from Quantico, Virginia, where Bradley Manning is being held in the Marine brig there. Lots of response online. Jonathan says, Manning is an American hero. He exposed and embarrassed the military, much as at My Lai. Now he's receiving their vengeance. Winston says Bradley Manning is a traitor and should be executed. You can't have each individual deciding what the government should keep private versus release to the public. And Michael says, I'd love for a hardcore Obama supporter to explain how Obama can defend the treatment of Bradley Manning. Glenn and John, I'll come to you in just a second here. A couple of calls. Susie in Columbus, Ohio. You're on the air, Susie.
Hi, Tom. Thank you. Mm-hmm. I think the torture of Private Manning is atrocious. It's against international law. There's no proof that he released the cables, and in any case, he's innocent until proven guilty. We need a transparent government, and the cables show how much is kept secret that we actually need to know. And I also wanted to say thanks to you for the show and to Glenn Greenwald for his great work.
Susie, you say torture, but I mean, if for now he's sleeping in his boxer shorts, I guess. I mean, a lot of people do that, sometimes less. Is that really torture?
Torture is keeping him incommunicado and naked and standing and not able to sleep and not able even to have a congressperson like Representative Kucinich check on him. This is not worthy of our government. I'm very upset that President Obama, I'm a lifelong Democrat, and I cannot believe that he is acquiescing in these police state tactics.
Susie, I appreciate your call. John Shelburne, on the naked part, one of the reports, and they're kind of confusing, I guess it's been different things at different phases, but one report said that he's required to come out in the morning and sort of, you know, stand for examination or morning salute naked. Does that sound right to you? Does that make sense?
I don't know that it does make sense, but I also don't know that that's even true. So, I mean, that's one of those that not being inside the brig every day, I don't know how accurate that is.
But could that be part of normal prison routine within a Marine Corps brig, by your understanding?
Not to stand at attention and render any kind of courtesy. I think it's a matter of coming out and probably being reissued whatever clothing that he's going to wear for the day.
Let's go to John in Murfreesboro, Tennessee. John, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Just a real quick point. I've noticed since 9/11 took place and all the way up to this point, it appears that we've gotten in the habit of, you know, accusing others of atrocities overseas and how bad it is. But by looking at these leaks, it exposes the fact that, you know, we may be just as at fault as they are. I mean, without him coming out and saying these things, releasing them to WikiLeaks, would the condition still be set as the same way that it always has been? Would the status quo continue? Would our diplomats still be acting in the same way they are? And I feel like that, you know, due to that exposure, we have to depend on a junior officer to show us a moral compass.
But what about the downside here, John? What about the U.S. government says, look, we've got allies who have been exposed here, people important to us defending the United States who have been put in harm's way by Private Manning's leaks?
I agree with you, but does turning around and acting the same way solve the problem?
Yeah, let me get. I got it, John. And one more, then we'll go to Glenn, Raleigh, North Carolina. Robert, you're on the air.
How you doing, Tom?
Pretty well. What do you see?
Well, you know, I see a lot of outrage and indignation from a lot of groups and people over the treatment of Private Manning. And what is the big point we're failing to see here is that this happens every single hour of every single day.
Where?
In our local jails, in our state prisons, and in our federal prisons. I have just gotten back a few months ago from serving a more than 5-year sentence in a federal level, for nonviolent drug offenses.
What was the drug, Robert?
I don't want to get into that.
Okay.
But, I saw this happen every day when men would be put in the hole, sleeping on concrete mattresses without any kind of clothing, without blankets, only in their boxers. Getting to walk down the hallway and back was their hour of recreation time.
And the hole means isolation, I guess, in federal prison.
Oh, yeah, and we're not talking about what Private Manning is. And this is the thing, is that when Private Manning gets out, he's going to have a book deal, a movie deal.
You know, he may never get out, depending how the trial goes.
Whatever. But
never.
He has Kucinich coming looking at him, talking about him.
Yeah.
But there are tens of thousands of inmates every day in our federal and state prisons and local jails that are treated like just exactly like this, if not worse, and they don't have Representative Kucinich coming. They don't have, NPR talking about this.
Yeah, and Robert, I hear it loud and clear. I'm glad your time is finished and you're out. Walk the straight and narrow there. But Glenn Greenwald, how about it? There's somebody just out of federal prison who says, look, what's the big deal here? Tens of thousands of people putting up with this kind of thing all the time in this country in our prisons, and they don't have Glenn Greenwald, raising the alarm.
Right. Well, first of all, the fact that some abuse or injustice is common is not a reason to refrain from discussing it and objecting to it in a particular case. Secondly, there are all kinds of people who have been raising all sorts of concerns about the heinous treatment of prisoners inside the American domestic prison system. Jim Webb actually introduced a bill 18 months ago to have fundamental reform because there are serious abuses inside America's prison system. It's estimated that 25,000 inmates are held in prolonged solitary confinement, which itself is a form of torture. But one thing that I would point out is that there is a difference between people who are in federal and state prisons after having been convicted and Bradley Manning. And that difference is rather fundamental when it comes to things like constitutional rights, which is that unlike people who are in prison after having been convicted, Bradley Manning has never been convicted of anything. And therefore, the government is required to treat him as an innocent person, to assume that he is not guilty but innocent. No form of inhumane treatment or torture is ever justifiable, whether someone is guilty or not. In fact, I have a book coming out in several months about the legal system, and a whole chapter deals with the inhumane treatment of prisoners inside the United States. So it's not true that people ignore it or that only Bradley Manning is getting this form of attention. But what's particularly pernicious here is that he is innocent in our legal system and yet is still being treated this way. The Military Code of Justice prohibits holding people in pretrial detention in the way that's designed to punish them, which is exactly what's happening here, and it has broader objectives about stifling whistleblowing, bolstering the regime of secrecy, and inducing testimony against WikiLeaks, which is why it's received added attention as well.
Glenn, before you came on, we played the tape of President Obama in his recent press conference saying he was asked about this, in particular Bradley Manning. He said, look, I asked the Pentagon about it, and they said everything was just fine. You heard perhaps me reading one of our listeners online saying, what's the defense for that? Guantanamo's still open. Here's President Obama, awfully tough on Bradley Manning and by extension, I think, other whistleblowers as well. What about the president's position here, Glenn?
Well, what's extraordinary is if you look at George Bush's book, Decision Points, he talks about why he believed that what he did was correct with regard to the interrogation regime that was actually a torture regime. And what he said in his book to defend himself is almost verbatim what Barack Obama said at that press conference. George Bush said, I went to the Pentagon and to the Justice Department and asked whether or not any of these things were inappropriate, and I was told that they were not. That was George Bush's defense to the inhumane and abusive treatment of detainees. It was exactly Barack Obama's. And in Barack Obama's case, it's even more inexcusable because he actually ran on a platform of reforming exactly these kind of abuses and putting an end to the inhumane treatment of detainees. That's why millions of people voted for him. And so for there to be all kinds of credible reports over the period of months that Bradley Manning is being abused and treated inhumanely and even tortured using the definitions that the United States government itself has used in the past in terms of holding people in prolonged solitary confinement. And in response to that, do nothing but go to the Pentagon, the very people who are responsible for the treatment, and say, are you doing anything wrong? And once he's told, no, we're doing everything by the book, no need to worry, to then have that be the end of the matter is really quite inexcusable. It's his military that's doing this. He's the commander-in-chief. He obligated himself to investigate such concerns and to put an end to detainee abuse. And so for him to simply brush it aside and dismiss it away based upon these kinds of conclusory and very cursory questions, I think is something that people expect of George W. Bush and got from George W. Bush, but not from President Obama.
So across the board, how do you weigh this? Is President Obama better than President Bush on the treatment of detainees?
Well, I mean, I think President Obama deserves credit for issuing an executive order on the second day in office, withdrawing all authorizations for enhanced interrogation techniques. I mean, that he deserves credit for. He put an end to that, and that's a good thing. But when it comes to what's being done in the realm of persecuting whistleblowers and trying to increase rather than decrease the wall of secrecy which surrounds our government, Obama also ran on a platform of protecting what he called the courageous and patriotic whistleblowers who expose fraud and waste and illegality in our government. He said they need to be fostered and protected rather than persecuted. I think it's much worse, and it's worse still to have detainee abuse not offshore at Guantanamo directed at foreign nationals accused of terrorism, but onshore on U.S. soil directed at an American citizen. That is a step up in the world of detainee abuse, and there I think one can make the case that he's gone beyond what Bush did.
Let's get Linda on the air here from Brookline, Massachusetts. Linda, thanks for joining us.
Yes, hello, Tom. Hi. Thank you. I have a question and a comment. I am also an Obama supporter who is very disappointed that this constitutional expert that we have as a president is not observing the constitutional rights of this young man. Mr. Sheldon referred to the fact that you don't check these rights when you become a soldier.
But what about the young man's apparent crime? You're saying...
No, may I just finish what
I was saying? Of course.
This is my question.
Mm-hmm.
Why does he not have the constitutional right to habeas corpus? He is sitting there in really abusive treatment, and I can see that one of the motives is to intimidate other mm-hmm. folks who might be tempted to leak information. It's partly intimidation. But what's happened to his constitutional right of habeas corpus? If they can do this to an American citizen, they can do it to any one of us. And Tom, just one comment.
Mm-hmm.
You have said a couple of times, he did this thing. He leaked these papers. And I really love your show. I hate to criticize you, but please don't convict this man. He has not been brought before a jury.
Linda, that's fair enough, and I take your point. I think I've said accused and alleged as well. But it is a fact that his emails are out there talking about this. He saw himself apparently as a whistleblower. But point taken, it's always good to keep that bright line, and I appreciate your call. John Shelburne, what about habeas corpus here? And is it being abused?
Well, I don't think so, and here's the reason I disagree with that comment. Combs has filed the motions
are
necessary. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mr. Combs has already filed a motion, you know, challenging the unlawful detention. There are mechanisms in place. If those challenges don't get answered, they do have the ability to file extraordinary writs. But the one thing that I guess kind of take issue with one of the comments that Glenn made and kind of highlighting mm-hmm. what Christine said earlier in her phone call mm-hmm. way early in this program, the military in this particular circumstance is somewhat between a rock and a hard place, both in the confinement aspect of a pretrial detainee, but also, you know, going to the level of President Obama's response. If I'm a defense lawyer attacking the government, one of the things that we have as in our arsenal of motions is what we call an unlawful command influence motion. And if President Obama makes any other comment than a neutral somewhat, hey, I've looked at it, I'm aware of what's going on, if he makes any other comment, you can guarantee that the defense lawyer is going to immediately jump on that and start arguing that the command is receiving unlawful influence in this process, and that by itself can be enough to actually dismiss a charge against an accused.
But, John, can we go to the bigger picture here? I mean, you say it's not abusing habeas corpus because things are still in train, but it's a long time now. I mean, how long? And what about, to Linda's point, Americans watching this, they may be very critical, maybe. May see him as a hero, a whistleblower, or be very critical of what Bradley Manning did. But do we see some creeping here across some line? He is an American citizen. To think of an American citizen in the justice system, you know, being mistreated, being humiliated, being isolated, maybe unreasonably, being put there naked. I mean, do you see a kind of, erosion here of American expectations of justice. Bradley Manning is a citizen of this nation.
In this circumstance, I do not. And the reason I don't is because the third branch is still active and alive in this process. And once, and I understand the time that it's taken to get to this point, but there are other things happening behind the scenes that I think Scott referred to earlier. The motions that, and both sides from the government and the defense make pointing fingers at each other that the delay is the other side's fault. The simple fact of the matter is that both sides have asked for what we call excludable delay in this process, and it has been granted according to the proper procedures that are in the rules for court-martial. And so until that finds its way in front of either a military judge or the extraordinary writ, if it's filed, is granted, the appellate courts don't even get an opportunity to weigh in.
I don't want to be in a hole naked here in this country in its justice system, but I take your point. Glenn Greenwald, we've just got a minute here. Your thoughts on what's on the line in the Manning case? A lot maybe in terms of classified information. What about in his treatment?
Well, one of the things that most people who were critics of the Bush administration said for years was that how we treat detainees is a reflection of what kind of country we are, what our values are, and what our behavior in the world is going to be. I think that's clearly at stake in terms of who we are, but I also think what's at stake is the ability of the government to intimidate and mistreat people who want to expose the things that they're doing that are wrong and that should be exposed. And whether we're going to continue to learn about our government and the wrong things it does through whistleblowing, I think is one of the principal goals that's at stake in terms of both the battle over WikiLeaks generally and the conditions of Bradley Manning's treatment specifically.
Glenn Greenwald with Salon.com joining us today from Rio. Thank you very much for being with us, Glenn.
Thank you.
And John Shelburne, Reserve Marine Judge, Advocate General JAG, joining us today from Washington, D.C. John Shelburne, thank you very much for being here today.
Thank you.
Listeners, you can continue the conversation and get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. Thanks for joining us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.